Now, as they're headed toward Jerusalem, the disciples had to know that the opposition was mounting. The Pharisees were coming with more frequency to ask questions to try to trip Jesus up. Now, they had been to Jerusalem before for Passover, but this year's trip was different. Mark reminds us, remember, all the way through his gospel, that they're on the move. They were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way, he says. And the disciples he describes as astonished, and those who followed were afraid. I read an article in Time magazine about what makes scary music scary. Scientists have found that we respond biologically in fear to sounds that are like distress sounds in nature. Sounds like a baby crying or the rumble of an earthquake or thunder. And the scientific jargon name for those sounds is non-linear chaotic noise. Non-linear chaotic noise. The disciples and those following Jesus were astonished and afraid. Jesus is headed toward Jerusalem in the midst of a lot of non-linear, chaotic noise. The tension is mounting. They know that confrontation is coming, and Jesus keeps strangely saying that the Son of Man is going to be betrayed and condemned to death, killed, and then 3 days later rise. He has taught in parables, but they don't get this one. And every time the disciples haven't gotten it in the past, he has taken them aside and explained it to them, and he has yet to explain this one. They can't figure out the code. What is he talking about? What they do understand is that he's going to win. He's going to be the victor. And they want to be there with him in glory. It's interesting that Mark puts the scene with James and John asking to be on Jesus' right and left back to back with the story of the healing of blind Bartimaeus. Remember, I told you that Mark is an excellent writer, and he has a purpose for just about everything he does in his little bitty condensed book. It's only 16 chapters, and he covers all of the ministry of Jesus. And we find lots of layers of meaning in Mark's writing. These two stories have parallels that help us understand the word of ascending downward as we go from the mountain to the cross. James and John are confident. They come to Jesus and they say, "We want you to do for us whatever we ask." Bartimaeus sits by the roadside begging Jesus to have mercy on him. He doesn't get up. He waits for Jesus to call him. Jesus' question, though, when James and John come to him, is the same question that he asks Bartimaeus when he calls Bartimaeus to him and he comes. What do you want me to do for you? James and John are so certain that Jesus will come out the ruler that they ask to be his top officials, to sit at his right and his left in glory. And Bartimaeus says, "I want to see." Jesus' response tells us who really can already see and who doesn't see. He says to James and John, "You don't know what you're asking. You don't see this at all." And he says to Bartimaeus, "Your faith has healed you." Well, what couldn't James and John see? The Reverend Dr. Samuel Wells is vicar of St. Martin in the Fields in London, but from 2005 until 2012, he served as dean of the Duke University Chapel. And while he was at Duke, he gave a sermon on leadership, and he told about an experience that he had when he was involved in a large-scale, community-led economic development program. In other words, he's in a neighborhood improvement group. And he said, I poured a great number of hours into the process of shaping a plan, gaining funding, establishing a company, trying to bring more jobs to the community, better education, better health to the neighborhood. He says, 4 or 5 years into the process, I found myself late one evening after a meeting, still there, having a disagreement with one of the most prominent neighborhood leaders. He said, I was worn out and I was frustrated. And I said to her, why do you think I am involved in this process? Why do you think I've been involved all along? And she said without blinking, I assume it's for the sake of your career. He says, I was stunned. I didn't know whether to laugh or to cry. I thought, I live here. I don't live anywhere else. I've put a mountain of hours into this program. What do I have to show you I care about this place? What do I have to do? And if you think this is the kind of neighborhood where career-hungry clergy in their 30s spend their time, I've got news for you. But he says, I didn't say it. Because in a way, she was right, he said. Because what she was really saying was, you'll never be the right leader for this community because your identity isn't sufficiently tied up in it. She was saying she didn't see those things in me. Sure, I could be the spokesperson who went to City Hall and talked to the local leaders, and I could be between the suits in the streets. I could chair meetings, and I could keep us within the rules. But I was not seeking my identity from this process. My identity came from outside and from beyond. She put her finger on that, while I refused to see it. I think that's the difference between James and John and blind Bartimaeus. Blind Bartimaeus is ready to change identity. He is ready for his whole identity to be formed. Rabbi, I want to see. He's been a professional beggar all of his adult life. His whole livelihood is wrapped up in being blind. His name is Blind Bartimaeus. That is who he is. And he's ready to give it up when he shouts, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. He didn't care that the crowd was hushing him. He didn't care what people thought about him. He didn't come up to Jesus because he thought he was worthy. He was at the mercy of Jesus, and he knew it. And he was ready to give everything up and follow. James and John, though, don't see. And neither do the other 10 disciples. They are indignant with James and John for going to Jesus and asking to sit on his right and left because they got to him before they did. They don't see that Jesus is ascending downward. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all, says Jesus. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. And we have a tendency to kind of nice it up and change the word that we translate slave into the word servant. And I realize that the Bible was misused to justify slavery, and so we bristle at places where being a slave is lifted up as a positive thing. But here I think the full connotation of slave is critical to understanding what Jesus is saying. The whole identity of a slave is determined by the owner. A slave is labeled with the master's name. A slave does the work of the master's will. Jesus, though, is not a slave to God. Jesus is a slave to us. to the world. Jesus says, I made this my whole identity. I came. I took on your identity. And I am willing to serve to the point of death for you. He has no other purpose. He has no other motivation. Why do you think I'm in this? It's for you. And so Jesus asked James and John and blind Bartimaeus the same question. What do you want me to do for you? But their purposes and their motivations are completely different. James and John want to add to their identity. They're anxious to secure their future with positions of power, and they approach Jesus to see what they can anticipate. What's this journey to Jerusalem got in store for us? What's in it for us, they ask. But Bartimaeus is willing to be wholly transformed, for his whole identity to be changed. He cries out to Jesus for mercy, and when Jesus heals him, he follows. What if Jesus asked you, what do you want me to do for you? What would your answer be? As we come to this table, we come to receive the one who came, whose whole identity is to ascend downward and to be slave of all. May we come to empty ourselves and to be filled by him. Amen.